الأفكار والآراء والمعلومات والتي
هذه المقولة ولا تستسلم. نحن
الذين أولاد
هذا خطر فعل أتكلم عنه
الشباب يفكرون
This is where and the airport wasn't any different.
مع الأولاد
دبي إيرفورد.
Hi everyone, to our loyal audience, a warm welcome and good evening from Dubai and good morning from United States. Welcome to our 25th episode of Expert Talk Shows. As many of you are aware, the Expert Talk Shows has been convening experts from various fields who share with us their insight and exchange view where we can draw some solutions and actions on issues that have global impact. I'm pleased to inform you all that our shows continue to be a major successful in raising awareness about critical issues in our society. Today, our topics in this 25th episode is another important one, which concern many of us, as they happen not only in the school, not in the universities, but also in some offices. It is an issue that many individual parents are concerned. Bullying, yes, it is about the bullying. So our focus today is the way to deal with it and what is the anti-bullying rules currently and how we can make it work. Without any further ado, let me call Mr. Harith to open our discussion. Mr. Harith, please.
Thank you very much, Jassim, for such a lively opening for our episode today. Today, the Experts Talk Show, the first endowment digital platform, which was awarded the Dubai Endowment logo for knowledge endowment by the Mohammed bin Rashid Global Center for Endowment Consultancy, continues to attract new viewers and followers because of the interesting topics we present each time and the insight, opinions, and recommendations that people gain through the show. They get a better knowledge and understanding about trends and topics that matter in our modern lifestyle. Today, we are putting bullying on the spotlight, an act that can be prevented if we all exercise our power as a community working together. There are ways that have already been established in our society which can help identify and support children who are experiencing bullying and how to deal with the behavior of children who are being bullies. How can we better understand them? We will also call on the attention of adults and young people who tolerate bullying behaviors in peer groups, schools, and communities. To shed more light in this topic, let us welcome our speakers in today's episode, which we have specially invited all the way from the United States. Let us please welcome Jody Blanco. Jody is one of the most trusted voices in America about bullying. She has written a memoir, Please Stop Laughing at Me, a woman's inspirational story, which has become a New York Times bestseller. Our next guest is Glenn Stutsky, a senior clinical instructor at the University of Michigan. Mr. Glenn will be addressing some of the important topics that we need to understand about bullying, such as bullying, development of violence in schools, bullying in cyberspace, and bullying in the workplace. We appreciate the recommendations from our panel of speakers today. It is indeed helpful to access this type of high-valued advice from them, as this forms part of our social responsibility. Jody and Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Harth, to pay attention to this important social issues and for giving us your thought on this matter. Now, let me throw the first questions to Ms. Judy. What is the bullying? How you can define it?
That's a good question. I am a survivor of school bullying. So I was the first adult in the United States to look back on my lonely, difficult school years from the perspective of an adult. And I work inside schools in America. I do presentations, I have curricula. So I know the subject as someone who survived it and as someone who works with other kids who are going through it. And what I explain to kids and adults is that bullying isn't just the unkind things that we do to each other, whether in school or in the workplace. It's also the nice things, the kind things we don't do. So for example, many people around the world define bullying as hurting someone or calling them names or physically abusing them. But there is another more subtle kind of bullying that can cause even more long-term damage, which is exclusion. Kids in school who don't have friends because they are excluded by their peer group, never fitting in, always being excluded, can often cause more long-term damage than overt abuse, because it makes the person who is always excluded, who is always left out, to start wondering, what's wrong with me that no one likes me? So bullying is acts of unkindness, but it is also the lack of inclusion and compassion.
Good. Mr. Glenn, from Judy's answer, I'm sure there are a different type of physic and verbal. Could you please elaborate more here?
Yeah, there are different types of bullying. Probably the two most common and familiar are the physical bullying and verbal bullying. And both boys and girls in schools can do both of these, but oftentimes physical bullying is done more frequently by boys, especially when the bully is physically stronger, physically bigger, and older. And then with the verbal, while boys can do that as well, I've seen over the years girls use that form of bullying more effectively. And what Jody said about social isolation is one of the most powerful forms of bullying that I have seen, especially among girls, to be excluded from a group or not being able to sit at a certain table, not being able to go to a different event. And there are also some other forms of bullying that don't get as much attention, but are just as damaging. One of them is stalking, where someone is constantly surveilling someone through text messages or physically, you know, hanging around by them when their presence is not, you know, appreciated and not desired. Hazing is a form of group bullying. And then also rumors. One might not think about that, but in a child's world, rumors are very powerful. Something spoken and shared that is not true about you, that goes to your very character, and then having other people believe that. That's a form of bullying that's very difficult to overcome. So there are multiple kinds of bullying. These are some, and it's important to understand them when we look at writing policy or developing programs, because we need to be able to capture how bullying is expressed through all these different types.
Absolutely. I want to jump in too, because that was so true what you said and so profound. And when you're talking about addressing bullying, you also have to look at the dynamic of the bully. And I advocate strategic compassion for the bully, that just punishing a bully rarely will work, because usually the bully, no matter what kind of bullying behavior they're perpetrating, it's because they're hurting inside. The bully is often a child acting out in a cry for help. So we have to be intelligent on how we address those cries for help, or we can inadvertently, with all good intentions, actually make it worse.
Okay, now Judy, from your experience, what was the most common type of bullying and most dangerous in the two young children?
I think from my perspective, as someone who lived through it and survived, and as someone who's written multiple books on this, not just based on my experiences, but all the kids who I hold in my arms, I think that absolutely rumors, you are so correct, is absolutely one of the most damaging forms of bullying, because it makes you feel completely isolated. Other children who are your friends, if you're a student, your classmates who you thought were your friends, who you thought believed in you, are suddenly believing all these lies about you, and you feel helpless to respond. So the worst kind of bullying is the kind that makes you feel helpless and hopeless. Rumors and exclusion. I think exclusion is dangerous, because if I slam you against a locker, if I call you a horrible name every day, it will make you say to yourself, there's something wrong with Jody. She keeps slamming me into a locker. But if all I ever do, my friends and I, is pretend like you don't even exist, look past you instead of at you, talk about you instead of with you, never include you in anything, pretend as if you mean nothing, it may make you ask yourself, what's wrong with me? And the moment a child begins to ask themselves, what's wrong with me? That is when the long-term effects of bullying have begun to take root.
Thank you. Mr. Glenn, what do you think is the reason behind the violence and bullying in the school and the youth today?
I think there's a couple things. And in general, and this goes back before the time of the pandemic, I've been seeing over a number of years that there seems to be that empathy is going down in general, and incivility is growing up. And I think that that's very much a part of this. Empathy is key to part of the solution and remedy, you know, for bullying. I think another reason too that violence and bullying is happening in schools, to be honest, is that adults don't have the awareness all that they need about what bullying really is and the nature of bullying. It's not, like Jody was already pointing out, it's not just the actions, it's what happens through the intention of the bully, which is to gain power and control over that individual and to define who they are, not who they really are, but to define who they are. And so it's very important that the adults within schools understand the nature of bullying and the impact, that it's not just kids being kids. It actually is a form of abuse. And we need to begin to look at it that way, to take it as, you know, seriously as it is. Now, I think too that the pandemic has had an impact, at least in our country here. You have kids who, by the very nature of the pandemic, have even been further socially isolated. But bullying hasn't stopped during that time. It's continued, especially because a lot of bullying happens online. And I think that that's another thing too, is just we're seeing kids as they're trying to come back into school in person, we're seeing behaviors that are inappropriate. And I think the pandemic has contributed to that. So we're working on how do we reintegrate our children back into the classroom in person. We're having some struggles. We're trying to find our way.
Good. Mr. Al-Harith, as far as I know, you are always dealing with modern communications. So how do you feel about using the modern communication, which has led to the raising cyberbullying?
Modern communication and multimedia is just another platform that has been used to send messages across. So it could be used for presentations, it could be used for work, and it also could be used for other bad things. And I believe that the non-physical bullying could be done in any platform online or using modern technology. You could use, I do not want to name any specific websites, but you can go out there on social media and you can start bullying your classmates or your peers or your coworkers or even your family members. So I do not think that modern technology is going to stop it in any way. If it is used right, modern technology can be used for the good of mankind. But if it is used wrong, like everything else, it's going to backfire and it will enhance the effects of bullying.
I'd like to jump in, if I may.
Please.
And I'd like to jump in on what Glenn said and what you both said, is that 40 years ago when I was in school, if someone wanted to start a nasty rumor, they would write it on a piece of paper and pass it around class. And that paper would eventually disintegrate and be thrown away. Today, that same rumor could be uploaded on a social media site or uploaded on the internet. So the impulse for cruelty and the reasons why the human heart commits acts of cruelty, that has not changed. It is the weaponry that is used to achieve that cruelty that has changed. And modern technology and social apps, and Glenn knows this too, because we both deal with this every day, are not going to go away. What must come into play is that we need to encourage parents and families and educators to set an example of compassion and empathy and how they deal with children and in how they deal with each other, so that children have a good example of what empathy and compassion is to follow. And we must teach and reinforce empathy and compassion. In America, there is a huge movement in the schools, and I am very active and I create curriculum for this, called social emotional learning. And SEL, social emotional learning, teaches kids how to communicate their emotions, how to handle and maintain their emotions. And it's an important part of the learning day. And Glenn is absolutely right that empathy has gone down and our civility has diminished. So it is up to us as a global society, not just in America, not just there, but as a global society, to be aware of how we treat each other as adults, because children are watching us and they are absorbing what we do and what we don't do.
I'd like to add in one thing to go right along with that. And I think Jody is right on the mark. The kids pay attention to what we as adults value. And one of the things we need to do is we need to put value on things like empathy, kindness, patience, tolerance. Yes. In schools here in the United States, we make a big deal about achievements in terms of athletics and also in terms of academics. You go into any high school, you know, in our country here, and generally up by the front entrance, you'll see a big showcase of trophies for who can, you know, the team that could run the fastest, jump the highest, score the most points. And then you'll also see usually smaller, but also awards for academic achievements. Why? Because we value those things, you know, in our society. We need to also value the importance of these other things I'm talking about, like kindness. And when I say value, I mean, we need to put some serious awards and money behind that. I would like to see a school. I don't want to take away from the sports banquets we have here at the end of the year, where everyone's acknowledged for their hard work and their record and their achievements. And maybe they get some kind of a trophy or something like that. or for the students who have had such high academic progress. That's all good. How about an award for the kid who's like the kindest and most tolerant and, you know, person in the school? And I'd like to see that award be just as honored as academics and sports. Kids will be attracted to what we as adults really put real value on.
Exactly. Yeah. And to add to that very quickly, Glenn, you are so spot on. We must communicate after this show because you are a treasure. He is absolutely right. And to add on that is that every school should have like a make a difference club, an extracurricular club where like-minded students can figure out ways that they can make a difference just in their immediate world. Because when kids start making a difference in their immediate world, the larger world is changed.
Glenn, do you think schools are equipped enough to deal with the bullying?
Well, I can only speak from my experience here in the United States. Some schools are equipped, but most honestly are not. Most don't even have an idea to what degree bullying might be a problem in their school. And that's the very first thing. You have to find out to what degree is bullying even a problem in my school. And to do that, you've got to ask. What we have here are like school climate surveys or school safety surveys where we survey the students and the parents and the faculty and the staff. And we try to find out how much bullying might be occurring, not just how much, but where. Bullying is dynamic and bullying happens in different geographical locations in a school, and it varies from school to school. We need to know what kind of bullying is happening, whom is it happening to, and what is the current response, you know, of the school. So that's, you know, that's the first step, is actually finding out and then measuring the response appropriately. And the second thing I would make a point of with schools being equipped is, again, going back to, they need to understand that this is not just peer conflict. This is not just boys being boys or kids being kids. This is where genuine harm is being done. And we need to see that the intention of the bully is not even just only to harm someone else through their actions, but is to gain power and control over them and to try to redefine who they are, take away that very essence. Bullying is not so much the incidences or the actions as it is the intentions. And bullying can cause an injury. I mean, I've had a lot of kids tell me that the worst, as Jody's already said, that the worst type of bullying injury isn't when you get into, there's a fight and your body is hurt. Because if your body is hurt, in a few days or whatever, it'll begin to heal and stuff like that. But bullying brings wounds to the soul. It brings wounds to the spirit. Those often aren't seen. And that's why we need to understand those more subtle forms of bullying that occur right under our own eyes in the school.
And I want to jump in as well, is that give you a personal perspective very briefly. When I was about 12 years old, a boy at my school convinced all of his friends to jump me after school in a snowstorm, hold me down, and throw snow at me, okay? And then suddenly they were laughing and it got out of hand, and they were shoving snow in my throat until I started to choke and they ran off. That's why I tell kids when I go into schools, when I speak at schools, and kids will say, we're just joking around. It's not just joking around. Bullying can damage you for life. But here's the thing. I was angry at him for years. I found out 20 years after that Jerry, he did that. He was hurting a lot of kids that semester because his mother left the family. His father was very sick with alcoholism. There were 7 children in the family and no one was feeding them. So Jerry would steal food from school in the afternoon and feed his 6 little brothers and sisters So he was a bully that year, not because he hated me or wanted to hurt me or any other children that he bullied, because he was scared and in pain. And he was afraid to tell the school because he was afraid of what the government would do to his family. So the principal of that school punished Jerry. They made him stay home from school in America. We call it a suspension for 1 week. And when he came back from school, he was so skinny from hunger. He looked like he had cancer and no one did anything. So I am not saying that the bullies shouldn't be dealt with, but we need to be enlightened in how we work with bullies. We cannot just get angry and punish them. We have to find out, why does this child want to, as Glenn so eloquently said, redefine another child's character? Why does this child need to have this control over another child? Is it because the bully feels no control at home? We must not only ask the question of what is happening, we must ask, why is this child behaving this way, so that we can help all of the children involved, the bully, the victim, and the bystanders, the children who stand by and let it happen. We need to bring empathy everywhere. Glenn is so correct.
So Judy, do you think the bullying in the middle school or high school is worse than when we were in the elementary school?
When we were in school? I get asked that question all the time. I don't think bullying itself, the impulse for cruel behavior, is any worse today than it was 40 years ago. But the weaponry to achieve it, like social media and the internet, has made it more dangerous. Just like 5,000 years ago, when we went to war, we may have used bows and arrows or clubs. Now we have nuclear weapons, but the human element behind it, I think, remains the same.
Mr. Al-Harith, that will lead me to ask you questions. What should parents do if they feel their children are being bullied?
And my point of view as a parent, I think the first thing that a parent should do is reach out to an expert like Jody and Glenn and try to understand how to deal with such a situation. Because as we just heard from Jody, there might be a lot of reasons behind bullying situations. It might not be because of the child's attitude or misbehavior. There might be something much deeper that needs to be figured out and solved. And I think not a lot of parents are equipped to handle I believe no parents are ready to handle such a situation. And the same way you would go to a dentist or a orthopedic for a specific type of injury, this is an injury that you have to seek the correct advice to know how to deal with it, and not try to deal with it in a certain way and cover it up for your child and tell him, it's okay, you will get over it. It's okay, you'll get over it. You as the parent, you might get over the headache of the actual situation, but you do not know how deep this child might carry these injuries with them. It might not be, as Jody said, it might not be physical. And as Glenn said, the damage to the soul is much greater than the physical damages.
I'd like
Glenn,
to
yes, to please, I was about that. To yes, Glenn, I was about to ask your comments on Al-Harith.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry for interrupting. There is something we can do that goes right along with what was just said there. I have to say that as a parent, you know, especially in years past, before I knew much about the real nature of this, my first, you know, inclination was to myself go and find that bully and grab them from around the neck and shake them and say, stop hurting my child. And but in coming to understand it better, here's one thing that we can do, and you don't have to be an expert to do this, and that is to listen to your child, to resist that first impulse to be angry and go do something, and create a place where your child can safely share. We need to understand, because the nature of the injury, it can be very difficult for a child or anyone, even in the workplace, to share, because it is embarrassing to be the victim of bullying. You often feel that you have been degraded, you have been belittled, and there's shame. There may also be fear, that if they share with you, you might go off half crazy or something and do something that could make it worse. So we need to listen. The second thing is we need to believe them. We need to believe that that is what's happening in their world. I remember one time a father sharing with me, he said, oh, my daughter was telling me about how awful it was. You know, someone didn't like her in school, and her world is, you know, is over. And he said, I told her that, oh, you know, wait till you grow up and you have problems in the real world. And I said, sir, I said, that is your daughter's world. And it is, from her point of view, coming to an end. We have to be able to come into the world of our child in order to see what they're seeing, feel what they're feeling. We need to be able to touch their pain to understand this. Then, so listening without judgment, believing them. And then the third thing goes right back to what was shared, which was excellent, is then seeking out more information and getting, you know, some expert counseling, whether it's through, I'm not sure what all the setups are there, but with, you know, here we have school psychologists, sometimes school nurses, social workers, you know, school social workers, is to seek out consultation with them to put together a plan. And I would say one other thing. And again, this kind of goes against a lot of our instincts, because we want to fix it as a parent. We don't, it hurts us to see our children hurting. But bullying in many ways is about being made powerless or feeling powerless, like Jody has already shared. You don't want to take away the power from your child, which means, and this may be a little different for us as parents, is we need to have a cooperative partnership with them. Keeping the channel of communication open is so crucial. We, of course, have the final word as parents, and we have responsibility for them, but to make them a part of the process. Don't take that away from them. Allow them an appropriate means to participate in the process of what the plan is going to be.
Yes, because, and Glenn is so spot on, because one of the, you know, I teach parents all the time, and I work in schools. I do professional development with schools. So I work with students, I work with educators, teachers, and principals, and I work with parents, all three, what I call the matrix of bullying, because that matrix is what allows it to occur and what can prevent it. And what I always tell adults is that you have got to include the child, because the biggest complaint I get from kids all over the world, not just in the United States, is that they feel like the adults take over everything. And in many cases, it's true. And the other thing, adding to what Glenn said, is that schools need to allocate budget to have anti-bullying programs, to bring people in. I mean, to bring speakers in. I work with schools that, I mean, sometimes I will do them pro bono because they need help so much. Schools need to work with people like Glenn and work with people like me and have us educate them, because if a school is just dealing with it on the inside, it can be difficult. They need to have programs. They need to incorporate kindness and compassion and empathy into their subject matter, into the school day. All of the advice that has come out here, and Glenn is so spot on. Every time he speaks, I'm like this, because we both understand this subject so intimately. For everyone who's listening to us right now, if you have a child who's being bullied, lead with truth and compassion. Be curious. Ask why this is happening. Work in partnership with the school. If you can, work in partnership with the bully's parents. Let us set the example for the children of what can happen when the adults work together with love and respect.
Galen, what do you think teacher can do to help stop bullying?
I think one of the, you know, there's a couple of things, and Jody has really already touched on these. And that's, first of all, is to provide an example, be an example of empathy and kindness, patience, and tolerance. And where, here's how I look at it, wherever you have authority and wherever you have status and influence, whatever the realm of your authority is, you can make that space what we would call here bully-proof. You can bully-proof your classroom. You as an individual teacher may not be able to bully-proof the entire school. Maybe some of the other teachers or the administrators don't really see it yet for what it is. But if you do, you can do something in the space where you are the authority. You can bully-proof your classroom. You can allow opportunities to raise awareness for the whatever grade level that you're teaching, allow the students to talk, allow them along with you to create what the guidelines and the rules are for the classroom. Of course, you know, again, as a parent and also as a teacher, you have the final say, but letting the kids be a part of that process. The key, I think the key is understanding that bullying is not about the actions. It comes down to fundamentally being about relationships. Bullying is a relationship. So just having, you know, punishment for certain kinds of behaviors, as has been pointed out, will not really get to the root cause of this. We need to see bullying in terms of relationships and the building of a caring community. The best approach, I think, to dealing with bullying is to approach it in a systemic way, in a comprehensive way, where your aim and your goal for teachers is to create a caring community and building those positive things in. And a teacher is well suited to do that just within her classroom. It's like if I was a teacher at the beginning of the year, this would be one of the first things we would talk about, because it helps provide then the kind of learning environment that's even better. And it's like, you know, I introduce myself and everything, and in this classroom, you are safe. You know, here in my room, you are safe. You know, we're going to make sure that that's a priority. Now let's talk about it.
And I'd like to add to that as well, gentlemen, that it's also very important that the child who is being bullied, either overtly or just sometimes a form of bullying is when a child is just made to feel invisible by their classmates. And it's very important that we communicate to these kids who are either being bullied or what I call invisibilized and excluded. We must communicate with them that there is nothing wrong with you. Sometimes it is everything that is right about you that can make others misunderstand you. Because if we as adults, like for example, I meet many parents who have a child who is excluded all the time or just sort of invisible at school, and the parent will say to the child, "What's wrong with you that nobody likes you? Why doesn't anyone like you? What's wrong with you?" We need to communicate to these kids that there is nothing wrong with them, that it is everything that is right about them that can make them a target. Because the more a child feels like there is something wrong with them, the more they will hold back in telling an adult and seeking help, and the more that will become ingrained inside of them. And when they reach adulthood, they will struggle with the long-term effects of bullying, when I go into a school, I tell kids, it's not just joking around. Bullying can damage you for life, that how you treat each other now will last long past school graduation. And we need to let these kids who are bullied know that they are not faulty. They are not a mistake.
Glenn, if may ask, what if your child is one who is doing the bullying?
I think that's a very important question. And some of the things that we have said really go to that, you know, to that point. It is important to get to what is underlying and underneath the bullying that is happening. I've heard bullies say a lot of things because I was curious too, well, why are they doing that? So I began to ask them, you know, if they would talk with me. And I found that there was a variety of reasons. I found that sometimes they were, is because they were afraid of being bullied. So in terms of not being wanting to be bullied, they became, you know, bullies themselves. I had some very disturbingly tell me that they found that it was fun. It was entertaining. They were bored. Others would say that that they didn't think it was really that bad. They thought, you know, they do that to everyone, that people, other kids can't take a joke. They're too thin skinned and things like that. But another reason sometimes children are bullies is that they're being bullied at home, or they're witnessing bully, you know, being bullying behavior in the home. Part of a research project I was involved with years ago, we were tracking kids who were in domestic violent home situations, and we were following them into schools. That's actually how I got into schools about this issue, and I saw kind of two things. Some kids went into schools and they continued, sadly, to be victims of abusive behavior. At the time, it didn't even have the word bullying. Others, though, I saw, went into the schools and became the predator or the bullies themselves. So a parent has to understand what is underneath. That involves listening. Again, not our first reaction when we know our child maybe has been, demonstrating bullying behaviors, but listening to them and trying to open up that communication with them. And then I would say, as already been mentioned, punishment doesn't work, ignoring it doesn't work, begging them to stop won't work, but providing an example of empathy and then providing opportunities for our children to learn empathy through possibly service, you know, to others, to involve them in some kind of action or activity or group that demonstrates care for someone outside of themselves, and providing them an opportunity to learn and to grow in empathy. That's something that parents can attempt to do.
Let me ask Mr. Al-Harf, what would be your reaction if you felt that your child being bullied?
I think my reaction would be the reaction of any parent. It would start off by being furious, by being angry, if my child is being bullied, and it would be worse if I get to know that my child is the one who's doing the bullying, I think, mm-hmm. because it would be much more difficult to handle. I think I would love to hear from Mr. Glenn and Ms. Jody about that. But if I knew that my son was being bullied, I would be furious. And it's going to take time for me or my better half to...
Would you talk to him directly or to the school?
To who?
If you find that your child being bullied, you will talk to him or to the school?
I think I'll talk to
both.
I think it goes to the age. Is it 7, 6, 5, 12, 15, or 17, 18? I don't know, in university, you know, it's a difference. Are we dealing with an adult or are we dealing with children? Mm-hmm. I really don't know. Excellent.
Judy, question. Judy, I think you would like to comment here.
Yeah, I think that, there is something that I work with all the time, which I call the adult survivor of peer abuse, the adult survivor of bullying. There are many adults out there who are parents who were bullied or just excluded all the time when they were in school. And they become adults and they become parents and they still carry the wounds of those experiences. And sometimes those parents, and there are many, many more of them than you may think. So sometimes those parents, if they find out their child is the bully, they go into denial. They don't believe it and they become very resistant. So it's important that if you're a parent, and you find out that your child is a bully. And by the way, I also divide in the United States, and it's like this in other countries too. There are students who are very popular. Well, some popular students are very kind, and I call them elite leaders. Some popular students are mean and controlling, and I call them elite tormentors. And it's very important if you are a parent and you are hearing that your child is one of the, quote, mean popular kids, it does not mean that you were a bad parent. It does not mean that you did a bad job or that your child is a bad child. Going back to what Glenn said, the best way to help a bully is to find creative opportunities where they can access their empathy and develop it like a muscle, serving food to someone at a homeless shelter or helping animals in an animal shelter. As Glenn said, acts of service. The more we punish bullies, the less connected to their hearts they will be. The more we find opportunities to help them connect to their hearts, the bigger their hearts will grow.
Judy, being a female, what is your opinion on the girl bullying and why do you think that's happening?
Well, I think, and Glenn touched on this and he's spot on, I think that girls are much more subtle in how they bully, but I think the damage of girl bullying can be even deeper than some boy bullying, because girls don't necessarily get into fistfights. You see that more and more, but by and large, girls use verbal abuse. They create rumors. They will do something that I have coined aggressive exclusion, where you'll have a group of friends and one girl will decide to get all of the other girls to turn on one person in the group. And that person is then completely isolated. That kind of bullying not only causes long-term damage to the soul, but it damages your confidence in your own judgment. So when you grow up, your confidence in your judgment suffers. So it's hard for you to trust. It's hard for you to decide who are your friends and who aren't your friends, because that was damaged when you were young. So girl bullying is often meaner. It's often subtler. And here's the thing, everyone, think about this. If a boy hits another boy, or a girl even hits another girl, you can discipline them. You can give them a detention, which is making them sit at school for an hour. There are things that you can do, but what do you do for the child who doesn't invite someone to something or who doesn't include someone? So that's a lot of girl bullying. It's not so much what they do to each other, it's the acceptance and friendship that they don't give on purpose.
That is so on target. I remember in the very early days when we were doing research on this with the University of Michigan, and I should say that in my family, I only have brothers, I only had sons, and I only have grandsons. I don't have a girl in the mix there. And so way back in those days, we all thought that bullying was just a phase that boys kind of, you know, went through. And we were doing some of the first research, and we were in Southeast Michigan in schools, and I was running some focus groups. And I was, you know, starting to prep and open it up for the students. And I'll never forget, there was this girl who, and this was at a high school, she knocked on the desk to get my attention. And I thought, oh, you're interrupting the researcher from the University of Michigan. What is this? And she says, you're talking about bullying like it's only the boys. And then she said these words that I'll never forget. She said, we girls are the biggest bullies there are in schools. And I didn't know what to say, except realizing that I did not know what was going on. And for 2 years after that, I began to kind of do a listening tour to hear what girls, you know, were saying, because they were saying some very disturbing things. One girl said, she said, the way that we bully in a classroom, I can cut a girl, another girl, not with a knife, but I can cut a girl with a look and have her bleed out, and the teacher doesn't even know what's going on. So what Jody is saying is very true. We do need to understand not just the similarities of bullying between boys and girls, but some of the differences, so we can capture that in policies and programs.
Judy, what's your opinion in bullying in the workplace? Let's get out of the school, let's go to the workplace.
Yeah, I think that bullying in the workplace often follows the same fundamental patterns that you see in the schools. For example, clique bullying. A clique is a group of people or a cohort of people who are friends. And just like they exclude, like you'll have a clique of friends and everyone in the clique will exclude one person because of a rumor, the same exact thing happens in the workplace. And in the workplace, that need for power and control is, there's more at stake in the workplace because you're talking about money and career. One of the fundamental differences though is dealing with bullying in a school versus the workplace. Here's a great example. One of the worst things that a teacher can do if there's bullying in a classroom is in the middle of it while it's happening to call out the bully in the middle of the act, because the teacher thinks that bully will feel ashamed and will never do that again, and the victim will feel supported. But it is the opposite. In many cases, when you call out a bully in the middle of the act in front of their classmates, the bully looks cooler to their friends. So the bully becomes more powerful among their classmates, and it is the victim who feels mortified because they're always, everyone's always stalking and staring at them. But in the workplace, that dynamic is different. If you're in a business meeting or you're in some sort of a meeting and someone is bullying you or putting you down and your boss intervenes and says something complimentary or says something validating, it has a slightly different effect. So while the and I do a lot of work in the corporate world, more in the schools, but some in corporate. And while I find the dynamic is the same, the ways to approach it are a little bit different with adults. And lastly, I will comment on this, that many adults in the workplace, okay, were bullied or excluded when they were in school and they never got therapy for it. They never addressed it. So when they are in the workplace, they are repeating those behaviors. If they were the victim in school, they tend to become the victim at work. So it's very important that we understand that, because it will enable us to help those people more. And bullying in the workplace, it's the same patterns as school, but there is more at stake. Glenn, what do you think about that?
Well, I had someone once tell me, Jody, that that bullying in the workplace, it wasn't any different than middle school, just a little more money and better cars.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, you know, and unfortunately, that's true. I remember after working in kindergarten through 12th grade bullying for quite a few years, I thought, well, at least when these kids get to, you know, college, it'll be different, you know, they have more autonomy. And I was greatly disappointed to find out, as research began to come out, that there's actually an increase of bullying at the university level. I could not believe it. And then I began to get invitations, maybe similar to Jody, to come into the corporate world. And I thought, no, you got to be kidding me. And I remember one, I'm not going to name any departments, but one department within the state of Michigan had brought me on. They had a major problem with bullying in their department. And it was interesting because bullies can have power that's not even related to their institutional status. And in this particular department, the main bully was actually the secretary, not the boss. The secretary. And she had a grip. People were terrified of her, that entire department. It was quite astonishing to see. So unfortunately, well, let me say this. I'd rather say this. If we can begin to address bullying at the earliest ages and stages, and then build it through our educational system seamlessly, then as people go through university and go into the workplace, we may be able to have more of an impact. And I'll just say one final thing. I got an invitation to come and speak at a preschool, which is before kindergarten here, you know, very young children. And they said, we've got a bullying problem. I said, no, no, you can't be having a bullying problem with preschool kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, I said, I don't know anything about that, but I'd love to come and hear. If I can help you, I will. And one of the things that the preschool teachers, you know, these are kids that are 3 and 4 years old. Some of the kids, they gave me one example of a girl who was having a birthday party. And then in front of everybody, she said to one girl and pointed to her, and you're not invited. And I thought, what is going on?
Yeah.
And so my point is that we need to address bullying at all the different levels in the workplace and all the way down. But I think we need to put a majority of our effort in a preventative way by building caring communities at the earliest possible stages.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Mr. Al-Har, I'm running out of the time, but I have some few questions and before I'm ending. Do you think, Mr. Al-Har, that the media is doing the right role to raise awareness about the bullying?
Absolutely not. I think the media are not giving enough justice to this topic, and they need to give more coverage. They need to cover more stories, not about bullies, but on how to tackle the actual full situation. And we have an expression in Arabic that says, in Arabic, it's فَقَدَ الشَّيْءِ لَا يَعْطِيهِ. If a person is missing something, that person cannot give it to the next. So why do I say this expression? Because I remember very clearly, Mr. Jassim, 25 years ago, if my old school is still there, I can go with you and show you the exact class that it happened in it. And I remember it like yesterday, because what happened was truly shocking. We have an Arabic expression that says, I will show you the stars of the afternoon. So, you know, there are no stars in the afternoon. So there was this teacher that was very aggressive. And whenever the boys talk, he says, stay quiet or I'll show you the stars of the afternoon. Stay quiet and I'll show you the stars of the afternoon. So there was this boy, a little bit cheeky. He asked him, he was like, sir, what is the stars of the afternoon? The guy was genuinely curious, and I'm sure he was curious. So he told him, you don't know what the stars of the afternoon are. Come, I'll show them to you. So now we are all curious, what are the stars of the afternoon? And he took the boy to the door, and the door was a glass door, and he pointed at the sky. And it was 2 p.m. He says, can you see the stars? So the boy says, no, I cannot see the stars. He says, wait, let me get you my tool so you can see the stars. So the professor, the teacher got the jacket, and he put the boy's face inside the sleeve and held it outside. He says, look through the sleeve. Can you see the sky? He says, I can see the sky. He had the bottle of water, and he opened it, and he poured it inside on the student. And we were eighth graders, seventh graders. And the whole class just started laughing at that boy. And this is something terrible. I was shocked. I was extremely shocked. Now, why am I saying that? And why am I talking about the media? Because back then, the strongest tool was the newspapers. And the newspapers were supposed to educate these teachers on how to deal with these students. And the worst part, Jassim, was the teacher took the student to the principal, and the boy got suspended for 1 week. Now, because the principal and the teacher, let alone this boy's mother, was also a faculty in the school. But I'm sure if I go and ask him, he's a good friend of mine. If I go and ask him, he would still remember and laugh about it. He had thick skin. My friend had thick skin. It didn't matter to him. At least that's what we felt and what we saw. But that was the wrong way to handle it.
And you see this, in schools a lot in the United States. This, you know, when you say this is truly shocking, I am not shocked, because I see this behavior in the United States. And if there's any parents listening to us right now, it's important to know that we've been talking about student on student bullying and adult on adult bullying, but we also have teachers who bully students. And so parents, if your child says to you that my teacher is bullying me, believe your child. Our job as adults is not to judge the feelings of our children, it is to navigate them. And if your child tells you this, believe your child and have their back.
I'd like to say that there's been not as much research, but some research on that, that shows very unfortunately that possibly as high as 8 to 10% of adults that are in education in roles are actually bullies. And here's a crucial thing about that. I think the wound goes deeper when the one who's supposed to be your protector is your tormentor. Where can you turn? And who will believe you? It's, you know, it's very important.
Judy, I have a few minutes. Could you tell us about your book, Please Stop Laughing to Me or At Me? I learned it is one of the most book being published. Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, Please Stop Laughing at Me is my memoir. It's the story of what I went through in school when I was bullied. It was the first book written by an adult about her experiences through the eyes of an adult. And it established me as the first voice of the anti-bullying movement in America. And I have since written a dozen books on the subject. I had another New York Times bestseller. I've had a couple. And now my work is I go into schools and I do a program called INJA. It's not just joking around, that consists of age-appropriate student presentations and professional development for faculty and administrators. And then I work with parents and families, and I have curricula and I have white papers so that I help the schools as a whole entity. And if anyone who's watching us would be interested in having me come to your schools, there is no distance that I won't travel. There is no place I won't go. If there is a hurting heart, I will come.
Thank you. Before ending, I have a general questions to all of you. I will start with Glenn. If you could put a stop bullying, what you would do?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please?
If you could put a stop to bullying, what would you do?
I think the primary thing that I would do is focus on building a caring community. The approach has to be systemic. It has to be comprehensive. The adults have to buy into it wholeheartedly, as well as, you know, the parents and the children. But it's in building that caring community. And I have actually seen it happen I'll give you an example of one school that I worked with for some time. And in the beginning, they had a program, a bully-proofing your school program. And they did the surveys, they did focus groups, and the adults were involved, you know, in it in a major way, as well as the students. And over the years, I remember just sitting back and watching that work. And I remember it worked so well that these teachers got invited to conferences to share about what they were doing. And I saw them at one conference where we were both sharing, and they wanted to have lunch together. And they said to me, they said, Glenn, we're so excited. You know, we're here sharing about this. And they said, we don't even have a bully-proofing program anymore. It has, the caring community has become just the way that it is. It's now our culture. And that's one final thing I would like to say. I know we're towards the end of our time, is that while there are some similarities, certainly across cultures, because kids are kids, but we need to take into account unique aspects of whatever our culture is. And, even to our own city, to our own school, to our own classroom, and draw upon the things within our culture to help us understand maybe some unique ways of bullying that are happening, as well as some unique ways to address bullying using the strengths from our own culture.
Thank you, Gillan. Judy, if you could put a stop to bullying, what would you do?
The first thing I would do is I do it in schools, is in addition to the caring community, which I cannot agree with more, because then it becomes the culture as opposed to just a program imposed upon the culture. It becomes the culture inside. In addition to that, that adults need to be curious. That curiosity leads to compassion. That if you are, it's very rare that there's such a thing as a bad child. It is almost always a good child emerging from a bad circumstance. So as adults, be curious, find out as much about that bully's backstory as you can, because the more you learn about the bully, the more you are likely to have compassion for that child. And when you have compassion, that is where healing begins on all sides. I don't care how intelligent we are, how determined we are. If we don't have compassion, the solutions will always be outside of our reach.
Thank you, Judy. Mr. Al-Harith, what you would do?
Mr. Jassim, I believe that there is a huge gap between two different, I do not know how to express this, but I'd say maybe nations or areas. What I feel that Glenn and Jody are talking about is a stage that is a lot more advanced than a stage that me and you are in right now. Me personally, I have never went into depth about this specific topic. And today what I have learned is amazing. And it is mind boggling to get all this information about just one topic, which is bullying, and you see all the branches come out of it. So I think number one, we should first have a community that acknowledges that bullying is a serious problem.
Sure.
This is stage one. And then stage two, we start making them aware about bullying and what we've learned today about compassion and empathy. And as Glenn said, we have to start with the start with the nurseries and then the kindergarten and then the grade school and then high school, so on. So you can reach to a community that is a caring community.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Al-Harith. Thank you, Mr. Glenn, Judy, and for sure that we are all responsible to help, to assist, to stop bullying in our culture. Thank you very much for being with us today. And look forward to see you again. Stay safe. This is me, Jassim Al-Bastaki, and see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Thank you very much, Jody. It was a pleasure meeting you virtually. And thank you for your precious time on shedding light on this specific important topic. And we promise that Expert Talks platform is going to be a platform that takes these important messages to the right people and spread the message. Jassim, you've been an excellent manager of the show today. Thank you, sir.
Jordan. Thank you.
And I would like to ask a favor, if I may, gentlemen. If Glenn, I would like to communicate with you just offline. I think we're so syncopated. So if maybe we could share our emails, I would like to communicate with you. And also, if you would share my website with your viewers or on your website. So if any of your viewers want to talk to me or want more information from me, to please give them my email and my website. Please encourage them to contact me via email. I am happy to talk to them and happy to talk to schools. And Glenn, what is your email information?
I'm going to put that in the chat for you.
That's good. The office, they will exchange that.
We will. If you don't mind, we will let our team send to Jody Glenn's email and vice versa.
Excellent. Jody,
I understand from you is that you do not mind that we post your information on our social media for people to contact you?
I want you to. If God is listening, I would love to come there and work at a school there. That would be a gift from the heavens. So shukran. Shukran kathiran.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a beautiful day ahead of you. And Jassim, have a good night's sleep.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good night.
Such an honor.
Good night.
Such an honor. Likewise.